Todd Hill, FM News.
Quiet, please.
Ladies and gentlemen.
You ready for the big show?
In exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
Lars. This is the Lars Larson Show.
President Trump is one badass president. He secured the border at a level we've never seen before.
Honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
For our country and for our children, the best is yet to come.
Broadcasting across the Pacific Northwest and covering Oregon, Washington, and Idaho on the Radio Northwest Network.
Lars.
And now.
He is an existential threat to democracy.
Here's your host.
Quiet, please.
Lars Larson.
The Oregon House just passed a plan to make sure roads across our state can be safe and maintained no matter what time of year it is. Look, we need to have safe roads so people can get to school, to work, to their appointments, and that is a primary job of government, and the House got it done today.
Pandy is Governor Tina Kotek, and welcome to the Lars Larson Show. It is honestly provocative talk for the Pacific Northwest states of Oregon, Washington, and Idaho. Now, Washington State has already seen its legislature increase taxes by a record amount, so of course, Oregon has to do the same. And that was Governor Kotek, who apparently over the long Labor Day weekend, like so many people, decided to take some time off and head to the Oregon coast and do a little bit of shopping. Only there was a special session of the legislature that was going on. Apparently, Kotek decided she didn't need to be there for at least some or maybe most of that Labor Day weekend while they were trying to pass, get this, the biggest single tax increase in Oregon history for transportation. Well, it has passed the House. It is due to be voted on by the Senate tomorrow. And this is over the objections of Oregonians. Let me get into the details of that in just a moment. But first, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. Glad to have you with me. And if you want to join the conversation, you are welcome every day at 866-HEY-LARS. And if you're a naysayer, and I may get some naysayers who love the idea of shoveling another $5 or $6 billion in ODOT's direction because ODOT is trying to hold the entire state hostage, as I've been telling you for the last couple of weeks. Because when the Democrats who hold a supermajority in Salem, supermajority in the House of Representatives, supermajority in the Senate, they have the ability, not the right, but they have the ability to pass anything they want. And yet this summer, when ODOT was asking for $15 billion or so over the next 10 years, even the Democrats chickened out on that one. They knew that the voters would have their heads if they decided to go that direction. So they said no to that. And then a smaller increase was also turned down by a Democrat supermajority. And then Governor Kotek said, let's have a special session of the legislature starting on Friday, heading into Labor Day weekend, when I think she hoped she could go on vacation to Astoria and do a little bit of shopping and Oregonians wouldn't be paying attention. Well, we are paying attention. And I want to remind you of something historically, and that is 1773. Now, it wasn't an increase in taxes on tea. It was, in fact, just the enforcement of an existing tax. But the key issue in 1773, before this country became a country, when it was still a colony of Great Britain, the issue was taxation without representation. And you know what's happening right now in Salem, Oregon? Taxation without representation. Representative Ed Deal talked about that yesterday.
Testimony was 94% opposed. Look at that pile right there. Look at that pile of testimony. Yet we're told in committee yesterday that the testimony was kind of balanced. If this legislature can't even acknowledge overwhelming public opposition, is it any wonder Oregonians feel unheard and underrepresented?
And I think Ed Deal is exactly right. And if I get a naysayer on that, I'd be glad to take the call. But imagine this. 4,000 people submitted testimony in opposition to this tax increase. Just 6% testified in favor. And as I told you last week, as we headed into the holiday weekend, the majority of the testimony in favor of the tax increase, almost all of it, came from either governments or officials or elected representatives who stand to get millions and millions of dollars from the tax increase. So they have a dog in the fight. The rest of the people who have to pay the extra taxes, they're the ones who number nearly 4,000 in opposition. And I think Ed Deal is exactly right. We got the same kind of issue going on, taxation without representation. And if you want to know what's in this crazy package that the Senate is due to vote on tomorrow, a gas tax increase of about 15% from 40 to 46 cents a gallon. That'll scrape $90 million out of your pocket. An increase in automobile registration fees that is almost doubling, $43 to $85 for passenger vehicles, $63 to $105 for utility vehicles and trailers and the like. $44 goes to $86 for mopeds and motorcycles, not quite double. Increasing title fees for passenger vehicles from $77 to $216, not quite triple. And a doubling of the payroll tax to support buses and light rail trains. But they say it's temporary. It'll expire January 1 of 28. And if you think there's any such thing as a temporary government tax, take a look around and see what actually happens. Oh, and also an increase on surcharges on battery-powered cars. They go from 35 to 65 a year. And for the all-electric vehicles from 115 to 145, and they want to put in a mandatory road usage program for electric vehicles, 2 cents a mile. Let's go back to Ed Deal and talk about the choice.
Oregonians are clear. They cannot absorb more taxes. They do not trust ODOT to spend the money wisely. And they want a plan that funds the basics without raising taxes. But instead, they get a false choice. You got to raise taxes or see roads crumble and crews laid off. And that is not leadership. That's holding taxpayers and workers hostage.
I think that is exactly the right way to describe it. With ODOT saying, if you don't give us more money, we will stop plowing the snow in the wintertime. We will stop maintaining your roads. That is holding the people hostage. Nobody at ODOT is held accountable. Not when, say, the Abernathy Bridge, one of their latest crazy projects, went from an estimated cost of $250 million to $500 million, now stands above $800 million, not quite triple. And they're not done with the darn thing yet. And then the Rose Quarter project, which also ballooned in cost because ODOT routinely lowballs on the way in. Oh, we can do it for $250 million. Oh, I'm sorry, it's going to be double that. Oh, I'm sorry, it's going to be triple that. Do you trust those people? And does anybody get fired in the Kotek administration? Of course not. And then Representative Dwayne Junker talked about what the Democrats are afraid the voters will do.
When voters sit down with their ballots next year, this totally unnecessary raid on the wallets will definitely be on their minds.
And the Democrats know the voters are going to vote their back ends out of the legislature. He also pointed out that we really ought to index all of these costs to inflation. And he points out that in Colorado, when they index their taxes to inflation, they keep their budget low. But in Oregon, it grows double the rate. Take a listen.
10 years ago, in 2015 through 2017, the biennium Oregon state budget was $68 billion. Now our state budget is $138 billion. It's doubled. Yet over the same 10-year period, Oregon population has only increased by less than 8%. Yet a 100% increase in our budget. It's madness.
Yeah, even if you factored in Joe Biden's inflation in the last 4 years, that could be 25 or 30% plus 8% in population growth. You get maybe to a 50% increase in the budget. Instead, they're saying 100% increase in the cost of that budget. That does not make any sense. And when the legislature says, we don't care how many of you testify against it, you're just citizens, you will pay the tax, I think they should pay the consequence. Back in just a moment. It's Tuesday after Labor Day, and you're listening to the Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network.
At least someone has a plan for illegal aliens.
Back in the White House, I will terminate every open borders policy of the Biden administration and begin the largest deportation operation in American history.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
That makes a lot of sense. A lot of nonsense.
Right. You're bloody well right. You know you got a right to sit.
This is the Northwest Nonsense.
How much longer do we have to sit for this nonsense?
That great moment every day where Lars brings you the cold, hard facts without any liberal wokeness from the Daily Dead fish wrapper or mainstream media bias.
Just think about all those liberal progressives who march out in the streets of American cities claiming they are protecting and preserving democracy. That same bunch went to Salem this past weekend and shoved through the single largest transportation tax in Oregon history. It has passed the House. It has yet to pass the Senate. And I think Republicans are going to have to answer, are you going to walk out and deny a quorum in the Senate? That vote came after 4,000 citizens testified on the tax hike, 94% of them in opposition. $4.3 billion in higher taxes and fees over 10 years to fund a bloated ODOT. The same ODOT that makes billion-dollar budget boo-boos and starts projects that grow to 300% of their original cost. The same agency that holds Oregonians hostage by threatening to stop road maintenance and snow plowing in the winter if they don't get their cash. Democrats responded to that blatant extortion by agreeing to pay the ransom with your wallet, of course. Thousands of citizens took the time to tell them no. And then Democrat lawmakers spit in those citizen faces, and they did it anyway. If they didn't, the labor unions that cash in big time on those ODOT contracts, they would cut off the Democrats' campaign donations. And we can't have that now, can we? Remind me again, which party is it that's promising to protect democracy? I'll get to your calls in a moment at 866-HEY-LARS and naysayers at 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. And by the way, you can vote in our X poll. It took a little bit of a different tack, not about Salem or Olympia. Are liberal progressives in danger of literally going extinct? There's been an analysis by statisticians taking a look at birth rates, and birth rates based on the politics of the family. It shows that birth rates are above replacement level fertility. That's slightly more than two per couple. For those who self-identify as conservative, they are way below replacement levels for those who identify as progressive. Now, I would agree with you if you said, well, kids don't always grow up with the same politics as their parents, but there does seem to be a pattern. An awful lot of conservative kids come from conservative parents, and liberal kids come from insane progressive parents. Well, the fact is, human beings may be going extinct, but maybe it's only the progressives that are becoming an endangered species. Are liberal progressives in danger of going extinct, not just in America, but worldwide? Our X-Poll is brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at ultimatetruckservice.com. Our question of the day, brought to you by Multnomah Medical Clinic. No pills, no shots, no surgery. Get better fast at Multnomah Medical Clinic. Greg writes in, Lars, I drove from Portland to Salem today for various reasons. I thought I'd drive by the Capitol. Instead, I parked and walked my dog around the parks and the Capitol buildings. I didn't see any protesters on the tax increase. I did notice the building is closed to the public, doing business in secret, as the Democrats like to do. And as I would mention, in violation of Oregon's Public Meetings Act, I believe. A lot of very nice cars parked in the reserve parking lot close to the entrance probably belong to a current batch of senators inside the building screwing the public. Still construction on the Capitol building, which means more money being wasted on other infrastructure projects. Anyway, that's my rant for today. My favorite post on X today from Nick Sorter, the man who went viral for towing away an ICE vehicle, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, while they were making an arrest in Los Angeles, has now been arrested himself. FAFO loser Bobby Nunez, who was angry about his perp walk being filmed, now faces 10 years in prison. Nunez, get this, was tracked down by DHS via TikTok. Thank you. One of the few good things about TikTok. And now today's Daily Grill.
Insane.
Are you completely insane?
Ridiculous.
They get more and more ridiculous.
Flat out dumb.
You're even dumber than I thought.
Who deserves today's Lars Grill of the Day?
Maybe they're just really, really stupid.
Presented by Oregon City Garage Door.
Today's grill was inspired by Oregon Catalysts and the Taxpayers Association. Out of all the days in August and September to call a special session, Governor Kotek called them into emergency special session during Labor Day weekend, often the fourth most traveled time in America. Kotek didn't show up to the hearing to promote her own gas tax bill. It was not until late last night that she finally appeared at the Capitol. Rumors in the Capitol said she spent the weekend at the coast vacationing while she forced others, Capitol staff, lawmakers, etc., to work. This is not the first time Kotek was taking it easy. She previously threw a $9,000 taco party for government workers at the governor's mansion. Our best email of the day so far, but you can send more to talk@LarsLarson.com. Brought to you by Cap Concrete Coatings. Turn your garage, patio, or driveway from ugly and rough to beautiful and tough. I've seen it with my own eyes. They did it for me, and it's beautiful. Check out CapConcreteCoatings.com or call 855-CAP-THAT. Kevin writes in, Lars, on September 1st, I bought two cans of wood preservative at Ace Hardware. When I glanced at the receipt, I noticed a charge I'd never seen before, an ecology fee. Total cost for the cans, $55.98. The ecology fee, $3.90. Thus, the secret ecology sales tax on my purchase was 7% of the total purchase. I Googled ecology fee Oregon, couldn't find anything about it. I have no confidence in this so-called ecology fee will be used for anything but a contribution to a state slush fund. Maybe this fee has been around a long time and I missed it. I wonder what other secret sales taxes are happening that I haven't noticed. Please withhold my name. So, glad to get your phone calls and your emails at 866-HEY-LARS. Let me go first to Jim in Portland. Jim, thanks for listening on the Radio Northwest Network and our affiliate station, our flagship station, KXL. What's on your mind?
You know, Lars, I sit here and I wonder, what in the world do these Democrats have to do to the voters in this state before they wake up and realize they don't give a damn about you? They constantly, as you stated, spit in your face, give you a giant middle finger, raise taxes. You've got 94% of the people that were opposed it, against it, and but what's the percentage that continues to vote for Democrats in this state? They're sitting down there laughing at you, saying, man, what do we have to do to these people to get them to vote Republican? Well, apparently they can do whatever they want because the voters in this state are the absolute definition of insanity.
Well, and in fact, Jim, you know, all this hoo-ha about Texas and redistricting, the same thing happens in the legislature. So do you think with Democrats in control of the state the last 40 years that they gerrymander an awful lot of those legislative districts? They look at the map. They say, where are the conservatives? They split up the conservative vote as much as they can when they're drawing those lines to make sure they get a majority of Democrats elected to the legislature. And they just keep beating down the other side. So gerrymandering is an issue at the state legislative level, but I'm with you. I don't understand how it is you can say we're going to have public hearings and then we're going to do whatever we were going to do anyway because we pay no attention. You've had people testify against tolling by the thousands. They're still planning tolling. You had them testify against this tax increase. They're still planning on the tax increase. It's almost as though they want you to play a game. You show up, you testify, you submit your testimony, you have a few people show up from governments that are going to get lots and lots of money from the tax increase, and they say, we're completely in favor, and that's 6%. And the other 94% say, no, you're not going to increase taxes, and the legislature just gives them a big, fat middle finger. From Tina Kotek and the Democrat Party, they don't give a damn what you think. They're going to pass the tax and fund their own self-interest. Thanks for the call. You got the Lars Larson Show.
The Lars Larson Show. A message from Lars.
I'd like to apologize to anyone I've not offended yet. Please be patient. I'll get to you shortly.
Who's next? This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Radio Northwest Network. I'll get back to your calls in just a moment, but I want to spend a moment with Jason Williams, who's founder of the Taxpayers Association of Oregon. Jason, welcome back, and I want to know your read on what's happening in Salem right now. Olympia's already done its damage to the state of Washington, but now you've got Oregon with the House of Representatives just barely by one vote passing the biggest tax increase for transportation in state history. Is the Senate going to pass it? And is there a way the Republicans can stop it even though they're in the minority?
Yes. First of all, I'd like to say something funny. Before this broadcast started, there was a commercial on your a commercial from Feeding America that said some people in Oregon can't afford that. They have to choose between food or their prescriptions. And now, thanks to this new gas tax, if it's passed, it's going to cost many people over $300 a year. They're going to afford neither food nor prescriptions when you put a $300 tax on them. So here's what's happening. They changed the bill this weekend, and so it's been changed. The House passed it, and it is now in the Senate. There's some rumors that it's kind of scheduled for tomorrow, but I'm hearing some Capitol rumors that they may not have the votes, and so it may not come up tomorrow. The issue of the votes, it may be people changing their minds, or it may be also that they're having problems getting people into that building. They scheduled this during a high travel time. There's all kinds of these issues where they've been struggling out of the gate. They could not start. They had three false starts on Friday. And so that is some kind of the rumors happening out of the Capitol. If they do pass it, then I tell you, this is something that is ripe for sending a referendum. And it's ripe for sending these people packing home by taking voting them out of office. This gas tax is really inexcusable.
Okay, Jason, you and I talked about one issue that comes up all the time is the legislatures of both Oregon and Washington are allowed to add emergency clauses to bills. But one of the things that does, in a true emergency, like after a subduction nine scale earthquake, you might say, we've got to pass emergency funding and we can't afford to have it referred to the voters. But they put these emergency clauses on things just to prevent them from being taken to the voters. You told me that in this case, they're not allowed to put that kind of restriction on it, which means this could be immediately referred to the people. The signatures could be gathered. And would that put the taxes on hold until the signatures, until the matter is voted on?
Yes. Well, until it's made the ballot or not, or if it makes the ballot, then yes, when the election would happen. Yes, you cannot put an emergency clause on taxes. Thank goodness that is in the Constitution. Now, there is one other area, you may have noticed, missing from this debate has been COTEC.
Yeah.
So COTEC called everyone into special session on Labor Day weekend, the fourth busiest, you know, travel day out of time. It caused people not to be able to get the votes that they needed, the quorum that they needed, people to show up to the Capitol, lawmakers. Rumored is that she's been on vacation this weekend because she did not show up to her own hearing. Now, I say all this with COTEC to say that even though there's no emergency clause on this, COTEC gets to sign when she wants to sign the bill.
But that's assuming it passes the Senate, and you said they might not even be able to vote on it tomorrow. How long does that House passage, what's the expiration date on that? Can they just indefinitely say, well, sometime in the next few weeks, the Senate will get together and vote on it? Or does it have an expiration date?
There is like a 90-day clock for when when it's passed the House and the Senate. But and that 90-day clock, it may be 100. I think it's 90. But the governor, you can't do the initiative until the governor signs it. So if the governor waits a few weeks, it takes it out of the people's clock. That's what Kate Brown did with the business activity tax. She delayed it very long so that way people would not have time to get signatures.
Because, hold on, then when does the clock start to run on the 90 days to gather the signatures to refer it right to the ballot? Does that start now after the House passed it or tomorrow, you know, if they voted
after
through tomorrow?
After the Senate passes it.
So once the Senate passes it, even if the governor hasn't signed it, the 90 days starts running out. So if COTEC sits on it for 30 or 40 days, she cuts the 90 days to gather the signatures down to 40 or 50, right?
Yes, she can cut the time. I don't know what her maximum time is, you know, somewhere maybe around 30 days. I'm throwing a lot of numbers out, but it gives you somewhat of the framework that, yes, the governor could interfere with the people's referendum process.
So in other words, and that's thoroughly sleazy, isn't it? I mean, for a governor to say, I ask you for a special session, I asked you for the funding, you've now passed the funding, but I'm going to wait 30 days to sign it because then I'm going to cripple the ability of the citizens to refer it to the ballot. That's what she could say.
Yes, and the strange thing is the public has been left out of this whole process. This was the biggest issue of the six-month session. They did not get a bill up until the final few weeks of the six-month session, and she didn't show up until the last few days of the session to push it through. And then, this gas tax went nowhere, so now she's doing this special session where we didn't even have a bill number until a few days before they were going to vote on it. And we didn't have language until a few days before they were going to vote on it. We didn't even have numbers on how much this bill would raise, this tax would raise. The Oregonian criticized that. And so she left the public out of the process. And if she decides to shut the public out of the process again by delaying the amount of time, that is really inexcusable.
Okay. Are there people out there right now, Jason, that you know of who say, if it's possible to gather the signatures, we'll back the move to go and gather the signatures and refer it to the ballot?
Yeah, we want to do it. Senator Bonham, Daniel Bonham, has been fighting this since day one. He wants to do it. Representative Christine Drazen has talked about it. So there are lawmakers. There's the taxpayer movement. We want to do referral. The big question is, what is this bill? They just changed it like 48 hours ago. Are they going to change it again? Is it going to be passed? If so, what part are we going to refer the whole bill?
Jason, help me with process. If the House passes a bill, but then a different bill passes the Senate, do they have to call the House back into session to repass the changes?
Yes.
And yes. When is that going to happen?
You know, they're talking about this thing taking up all week. So, Kotek, she will keep them as long as it's obviously she has no concern over the whole voting process when you call them in on Labor Day weekend. They'll keep them on there as long as they need it because they feel like they have to do something. And they're actually saying that people are going to die if this bill doesn't pass. So for some reason, this little addition to the budget is going to be what's going to kill people.
I mean, because the gross amount is $4.3 billion over 10 years. So $430 million a year times 10 years. So their overall annual budget is 3.5, isn't it? With about $7 billion is the budget for 2 years, right?
What they're basically saying, out of that budget, this $500 million to a little bit more north of that is what's dedicated to fixing life-saving roads that are dangerous and not being able to fight wildfires.
It's maybe 12% of their overall budget. That if you take 12% away, because the extra $400 or $500 million would be about a 12% cut from their $3.5 billion annual number, taking away 12% and people will die because of the things that aren't done by ODOT. People need to be fired at that agency. That is Jason Williams, founder of the Taxpayers Association of Oregon. Jason, thanks very much. I'll get to your calls in just a moment. And why does Washington State now lead the nation in wrong-way crashes on freeways? And is WashDOT's fix going to actually fix the problem? We'll get to that and your phone calls coming up on the Radio Northwest Network.
And now, this musical message to anyone who wants to indoctrinate our school children.
Hey, teacher, leave them kids alone.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the program. It's Tuesday. It's the Radio Northwest Network, and it's a pleasure to be with you. This segment of the show is brought to you by 540training.com, concealed carry, home invasion defense, and personal defense online at 540training.com. Both Washington State and Oregon seem to lead the nation in all the wrong things, like drug abuse, overdoses, things like that. Why does Washington State lead the nation in wrong-way crashes? It turns out the Washington State Patrol has recorded about 500 wrong-way crashes over the last 5 years. So basically, one wrong-way crash, usually on freeways or highways, every 3 days. So when they say in the headline from the Associated Press, I believe, wrong-way crashes are rare but often deadly. Would you call something that happens every 3 days in one state something that is rare? Washington now sees them at more than twice the national rate of wrong-way crashes, 500 of them over the last 5 years. 8% of fatal crashes in Washington State involve a wrong-way driver. That ties the state with the state of Maine for the highest percentage in the country. They now say they're going to put in warning signs, more warning signs, and wrong-way signals to get the driver to self-correct. If they continue, the system sends an alert with video to traffic managers and pass along to law enforcement, allowing them to track the vehicle in real time. Can you imagine driving down a freeway at night? You've got your headlights on. You're seeing headlights coming the other way in the opposing lane, usually across a Jersey barrier. And then all of a sudden, the headlights are in your lane going the wrong direction. Washington State has almost the greatest number of those in the United States of America. Hear calls now. Tamara is on the line. Tamara, welcome to the Radio Northwest Network. What's on your mind?
Hi, Lars. I want to talk about what happened in Salem on Friday.
Yeah.
And yes, the Democrats are just so corrupt. But there was one Republican that voted with the Democrats.
Representative Javadi, who's going to join me in about an hour, and I'm going to put some heat to his feet.
Well, it's Javadi, Dr.
Javadi.
Yeah,
thank you for that, because I wasn't sure on the pronunciation. Representative Javadi will be joining me in about an hour, and I plan to ask him, why would you sell out and vote with the Democrats on the biggest tax increase in Oregon history?
Yeah, he's trying to say that he'd rather do it now than later, that he can afford to pay some more. Well, I can't. I'm on disability. I can't work. I can barely walk. And I don't drive that much as it is, you know, and I have to drive to Portland all the time for doctor's appointments. I cannot afford the gas as it is. And now they're going to raise it?
Yep.
How can we? I've never protested before, and I've never been so angry as I am right now. And I'd like to know what I can do to change this, because it can't happen.
There is a way, Tamara. There's a way, and I was just talking about it with the guy who heads the Taxpayers Association. If Governor Kotek does not play games with this one, if she signs the bill, if the Senate passes it tomorrow, and if she signs it, then in 90 days, if the voters gather enough signatures, it can be referred to the ballot and the tax is put on hold until the citizen vote, probably sometime next year. That's the best way you can protest. Any other kind of protest really won't change anything. But if we can get it referred to the ballot, and the voters who opposed it, 94% of their testimony, we should be able to get the thing shot down, and then the Democrats will have to live within their means. Let's go to Jesse. Hey, Jesse, thanks for the call. What's on your mind?
Yeah, hey, I agree with the tactic about getting it to the voters in a timely manner. But plain and simple, I got to tell you, most of the people that I talk to can't even tell you who their state rep or state senator are.
True.
Some of them can't even tell you who the governor is.
Sadly, true.
You know, that's the level of involvement that we see. And the 4,000-plus public comments that were offered up on Friday, I'm sure that that's just a drop in the bucket. But we have a legislature grossly, overwhelmingly leftist Democrat.
Yep.
That just do whatever the heck they want to do. And
that's true.
Will continue to be voted into office. That's the sad thing.
Well, what you've got to do is people have their own lives, their families, their jobs to be concerned with. I don't expect them to live politics. It shouldn't be necessary. If you elect somebody as your representative and they're looking out for your best interests, should you have to constantly be looking over their shoulder saying, what exactly are you jokers up to right now? It'd be like hiring a manager for a small business. If you owned a little store and you hired a general manager, but you had to spend full time down there watching over his shoulder to make sure he's actually doing everything in your best interest, taking good care of your store or a property you owned or anything else.
Not full time, but at least maintaining contact with them. Hey, how you doing? What's going on? Let's look at the legislative information system. What do you got cooking? Is there anything, that kind of stuff?
Jesse, let me point something out to you. As Jason Williams just mentioned, they said we're going to have a special session. And 48 hours before they're about to meet, they finally say, and here's the bill we're proposing. And
I
then
know.
It goes... So, in other words, you would have to have been studying on Thursday night to find out what the bill is that they're taking up on Friday morning that they plan to pass on a holiday weekend. I think expecting the voters to be that involved, then you don't need the representative. Just put everything to a public vote. Jesse, thanks for the call.
The Lars Larson.
Good morning. Ladies and gentlemen,
you ready for the big show?
In exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
Is the Lars Larson Show.
President Trump is one badass president. He secured the border at a level we've never seen before.
Honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
For our country and for our children, the best is yet to come.
Broadcasting across the Pacific Northwest and covering Oregon, Washington, and Idaho on the Radio Northwest Network.
Lars.
And now.
He is an existential threat to democracy.
Here's your host.
Quiet, please.
Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, and we're spending a lot of time talking about what Oregon's legislature was up to over the long holiday weekend because of the special session and because of the historic nature of the fact that Washington State having passed its biggest tax increase in history, and now Oregon is following suit with the biggest proposed tax increase in transportation package history for the state of Oregon. I thought I'd talk to Jeff Eager, who's a former mayor of Bend, but more importantly in this case, an attorney, political consultant, and writer at Oregon Roundup on Substack. Jeff, there's a little constitutional problem, isn't there, with what Governor Kotek has planned for ODOT?
Well, there might be, Lars. It depends on how she implements what she said she would do. What she said in a letter last week was that all of the funds from the gas tax, part of the tax hike, it goes to highways and to agency operations, quote-unquote agency operations. And the Oregon Constitution says since 1980 that all gas tax revenue has to be used for highway construction and maintenance or road construction maintenance. There is the ability to use some of that for the administration of that maintenance, but certainly nothing as broad as agency operations.
Because in that case, if she says we're going to take some of this money and use it to restore positions that don't have any real direct connection, I mean, other than that, everything ODOT does, I guess, in theory, has some connection to road maintenance, but she can't just spend it on the administrative bureaucracy, because if she does, she violates the state constitution.
Well, the problem is, Lars, that the first thing, so along with the tax hike bill the House passed yesterday, they also passed a budget bill that actually does add immediately 22 administrative positions, most of them in ODOT, two of them in the Secretary of State's office. None of those positions have anything to do with road maintenance and construction directly, right?
Yep.
So we're already off to the races here, creating new admin positions out of a tax bill we were told originally was going to fix roads.
Yeah, and in fact, she continues to say that. I've seen some lawmakers who say that if you look at the money they plan to spend, maybe 6% of it goes to roads, but an awful lot of money goes to other purposes. Now, they can do that with the payroll tax. I guess they can spend that on transit and things like that, but they can't, by constitution, do that with the gasoline tax, can they?
Correct. Yep. The funds that they get from the gas tax are supposed to be directed simply toward road maintenance and construction. But the fact of the matter is, this whole tax increase was driven by SEIU, the public employee union, which literally gets its money off of employing new people in the state government. And then they give a chunk of that back to Tina Kotek and the Democrats in campaign contributions. That's what this tax increase was about. That is what it is about. And that's why the first thing that the Democrats are doing is adding administrative positions when they get the thing passed.
Well, in fact, let me ask you about something, because you provided a great list. If you say, well, what else does ODOT spend money on that is not specifically roads or maintenance? They spend money on climate change. They spend money on diversity, equity, and inclusion, DEI. They spend money on voter registration. They spend money on promoting electric vehicles, and they spend money encouraging people not to drive cars. Now, none of that should be covered by anything from the gas tax, right?
Correct. None of it should be covered by anything from the gas tax. And it takes a much more in-depth budget analysis of how they actually spend this money to see where each penny that's derived from the gas tax actually ends up getting spent. And as you can imagine, they are not too much in the business of providing transparent information about that.
Okay, I don't want to get too far in the weeds, but Jeff, since you're an attorney, you've heard the term or the phrase money is fungible, right? And what, yep, I'm wondering is, are they planning to do one of these, a back and fill, where they say, yeah, all this gas tax money is all going to go right to people with shovels and asphalt and and building and rebar and all that. But then we'll take the money we were using from the regular $3.5 billion annual, almost $7 billion every 2 years budget, and we'll back that out because we've replaced it with gas tax money, and we'll spend that money on the bureaucracy. Is that what they're perhaps planning to do?
It's possible, Lars, and it wouldn't be unusual. There's a reason why the Democrats and ODOT deprioritized road maintenance over the last number of years, and that's because their political allies want them to spend money on people, not on fixing roads. And that's why the first thing they're doing, again, is creating 22 new administrative positions with the money that they get here. And if they are actually funding, if they end up actually funding and following how broad Kotek's letter was about agency operations with gas tax money, then that will be a constitutional problem for them.
Now, how fast can you get into court or somebody get into court? I'm not saying you personally, but how fast, yeah, can somebody get into court and get a judge? I guess it'd have to be a state judge, wouldn't it? Who's appointed by either Governor Kotek or Governor Brown or some other Democrat over the last three decades. But say to the judge, Your Honor, they're spending money on things they're not allowed to spend money on. Could you at least get a judge to put that on hold? Did I lose you, Jeff? In just a moment. Let me see if I lost Jeff. Jeff, are you still there? I might have lost Jeff's connection. Go ahead, Joel. Let's see if we can reconnect with Jeff, because I want to get that answer. Because if they're going to spend money unconstitutionally, then I would hope that you'd be able to go to a judge and have the judge say, this is an unconstitutional use of this money, and I'm going to shut down at least that use of the money. And if they're collecting the money, let me get back to Jeff. Jeff, are you there?
I'm here.
I lost your connection. But tell me this. Can you get a judge to quickly say, you're spending the money unconstitutionally, at least shut down that spending immediately? Because that would, if their goal was simply to fund more administrative positions, it would cut them off at the knees on that.
It could theoretically be pretty quick once you actually have the dollars flowing in an unconstitutional way. I don't think you can get any judge to get involved just based on Kotek's letter. But once money starts flowing through the system, and if there are dollars from the gas tax that are going to administrative expenses that are not directly related to road maintenance and road construction, then, there should be an opportunity to go in and get an injunction pretty quickly. However, as you mentioned, almost all the judges in the state have been appointed by either Tina Kotek or Kate Brown. So you're dealing with that as well.
Well, at least we can take a hard look at it. Jeff Eager is the former mayor of Bend, an attorney and a political consultant. You can find what he writes at Oregon Roundup on Substack. I'll get to your phone calls and emails in just a moment. Can you imagine the daughter of two parents who says, I have nothing to do with my parents and have not for years because they are MAGA parents? I'm going to let you hear what she has to say coming up next. I'll get your phone calls and emails, too, at 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. And you're listening to the Radio Northwest.
Ask Lars if he wants to run for public office, like president.
Do you know how much power I'd have to give up to be president?
This is the Lars Larson Show.
My brother was in town visiting me recently, and we have MAGA parents that we haven't spoken to in 8 years because Again, they're MAGA parents.
Yeah, you know they're MAGA parents. That is a young lady on social media, and she's talking about her parents and how she has had nothing to do with them for the last 8 years simply because they have a different point of view when it comes to politics. Now, if I thought this was an isolated incident, I wouldn't say anything about it at all. I figure every family is a little bit different. But I'm seeing this trend all over the place. The number of conservative friends I have who have told me why I've lost touch, I've lost friendships that I had for decades simply because people disagree with your politics. And the funny thing is, I never saw this happening during Obama. I didn't say I'm not going to be your friend because you voted for Barack Obama, even though I think that Obama did a tremendous amount of damage to this country, and I didn't like his policies. But I certainly did not end friendships over the fact that people supported Obama when I supported any alternative to Obama. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'll be glad to get to your calls in a moment at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. If you happen to be a naysayer, we're going to put you right to the head of the line. And you can vote in our X poll. You'll find the poll question at Lars Larson Show on X. You can also find it on my website at LarsLarson.com. And today's question, a little out there, but I wrote this one. Are liberals and progressives in danger of going extinct? And what I base that on is the Financial Times, a big financial newspaper, did a study of all the statistics that were coming out of society, not just in the United States, but around the world. And they found that when it came to conservatives, those people who self-identified as conservative, the birth rates in that community are well above replacement level. You have to have about 2.1 children for every couple to simply replace the couple that's having the kids because of accidents and disease and things like that. What about the liberal progressives? Well, they're not at replacement level. They are well below replacement level. And fact is, the progressives may be in danger of going extinct if they don't even reproduce at a rate enough to replace all the liberals and progressives who simply pass away. So you can find the question at Lars Larson Show and at LarsLarson.com. Let me get back to the young lady who finds herself so estranged from her parents because they have their politics that she doesn't agree with their support for Donald Trump. Take a listen to what she says about her brother.
But I do have a relationship with him, and I do love him, and he is not MAGA. So for his own benefit, I went and sat in support while we had this, like, weird dinner with my parents. And I was very shocked and also reassured to find that 8 years later, zero personal growth has taken place.
Now, here's what's amazing about this. She's saying that she's watching her parents saying, well, they're going to grow up someday, her parents, and they're going to change their mind about Donald Trump. And she says, you know, that there's been no personal growth. They haven't figured things out yet. No, you know, they sound like people who probably have a solid set of values. They supported a candidate that I support, and I admit I have a dog in the fight on this one. But I see good things coming out of Donald Trump's first term. I see good things coming out of his second term. But this woman apparently believes that her parents will eventually come to their senses and that they will understand that they were wrong all along, just like their daughter told them. I mean, a daughter who actually knows more than her parents are. We've never heard of that before, have we? But then she goes on saying her parents have not shown any personal growth.
I mean, we're talking like this is almost a decade, okay? And everything that happened economically and everything that happened politically and even just like what we may have gone through in 8 years as individuals, they are the same people. Just total problematic behavior. Racism, homophobic, sexist, misogynist, the whole nine yards.
Now, I actually had to sit and think about this one for a moment when she says everything that happened economically, because it was an article of faith among liberals that when Donald Trump was first elected, you remember, if you go all the way back to 2016 when the election happened, heading up to 2017 when Trump took office in January, the liberals said, well, Wall Street is going to collapse. And it didn't. It actually prospered. Well, the economy is going to collapse. It didn't. It actually prospered. Things did better. We produced more energy. We had more jobs, all those things. So when she talks about all the economic things that happened during Donald Trump, I really don't know what she's talking about. But then when she goes into this rant, and it's a familiar one to me, because people will say, well, you're racist. You know what they're usually talking about? They're saying, well, you insist that America should enforce its immigration laws. I said, what's racist about that? It applies to everybody, no matter what their race, religion, creed, or national origin is. Well, yeah, but it mostly involves Hispanic people. I said, because of geography, an awful lot of the illegal aliens who come into this country happen to be of a Hispanic background. That's not racist. It's saying, I want the laws applied to everyone. When they say homophobic, it means because you don't agree with a homosexual lifestyle, because you don't endorse and celebrate that choice by people to behave in a way that many of us think is sinful and wrong, that you say, well, that shows you're homophobic. You're not afraid of gays. You're just simply saying, I don't approve of that lifestyle. And believe me, I don't apply that just to things like gay. I've had acquaintances over the years who I came to find out were cheating on their spouses, both husbands and wives. I don't agree with that lifestyle either. And they were heterosexual. Who cares? If you don't agree with it, you don't have to endorse it. And yet, if you're from the left, they think if you don't endorse it, then somehow you're homophobic. And they, she goes right down that list, to that usual list that you're hearing from people. And then she talks about her mom.
And you can see where my mom, like, the gears are kind of trying to grind, but they're not quite making the cut. Because the machine is just so very old and outdated, and those skills have never been utilized. And I just, like, for anybody out there who's wondering, like, when this whole nightmare is going to be over and when they're going to get their parents back, like, when are we going to see the end of this train wreck? It's when the boomers expire.
When the boomers expire. I mean, this is absolutely nuts. She's on the verge of wishing that her parents would die because of what they represent. And when her mom says, no, I'm going to try to be nice to you, you're my daughter, but I'm not going to change my political point of view, she shows that is the gears aren't turning enough. Because as a young person, she can say, well, my point of view changes all the time. That's how crazy some people have gone because of Trump derangement syndrome. Let me go first to Scott. Hey, Scott, welcome to the Radio Northwest Network. What's on your mind?
Hi, Lars. Yeah, I was just, you know, just on that thing that you're talking about with that lady. We got Jeff Merkley. He's over in Israel land, along with another senator. And they're talking about, well, we want to go drive into Gaza. We want to go see it ourselves. And we want to look at this. And stuff, and they're told, "Well, no, you can't do that. We just don't have a way of doing that. Keep you safe." So, and then, you know, they're already with Air Force.
Well, sounds like your phone gave up. I'm sorry about that, but he's right. Senator Jeff Merkley of Oregon, not the sharpest tool in the shed, went off to Gaza, just got back a few hours ago. He was there with Senator Chris Van Hollen of Maryland. They went to the Gaza border, and they said, we've got to get urgent aid into Gaza. Well, in that case, Jeff, get rid of the Hamas terrorists, and you'll have no problem getting aid to the so-called Palestinians who don't have a state.
The Lars Larson Show. Donald Trump with a warning to Hamas at the Republican Jewish Coalition Conference.
If you spill a drop of American blood, we will spill a gallon of yours.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the program. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'll be glad to get back to your phone calls and emails in a moment. I want to talk about the federal budget. Will Congress finally cut spending and save America from heading into bankruptcy, which appears to be where we're headed? Although bankruptcy for a country this big, which has never failed to pay its debts, would be something that I don't even think we can imagine. Tommy Aiello joins me now, Senior Director of Government Affairs at the National Taxpayers Union. Tommy, welcome back.
Good afternoon. Thanks for having me.
So most people focus on the national debt. That's $37 trillion. That's kind of chump change compared to the amount of money we owe collectively for all the obligations of Social Security, Medicare, and, of course, federal pensions and things like that. But even without counting those, we're spending beyond our means by about $2 trillion a year, and we've got $37 trillion already on the Visa card. How do we get the Congress to cut us back to where we're at least paying our bills every year?
You raise a fantastic point. We're $37 trillion in debt. We don't get to that point by accident and overnight. It happens over the years by adding $1 trillion here, $1 trillion there. This year, we are running a $2 trillion budget deficit. That means we're spending $2 trillion more than we take in. That's a big problem. And I think with the one big beautiful bill that President Trump signed, it helps us address some of the core drivers of that, which is Medicaid. But as we go into September, at the end of this month, the budget runs out. There will be no more money to fund the federal government. There's a real test for conservative leadership here, where are we going to hold the line and say, hey, we are not going to spend more next fiscal year than we did this year, or are we going to work with the Democrats in order to find a bipartisan budget agreement that will no doubt cost us billions more next year than this year? It's a real test, and I'm hoping they'll hold the line.
Okay, and if they hold the line, the Democrats are going to say, then we're not going to vote for it. Can we get a budget passed at the end of the fiscal year, at the end of the month of September, that will actually get passed, get to the president's desk, and get signed, that would just hold it at current spending, which is still, as you point out, $2 trillion too much, but at least it's not $2 plus trillion too much?
Yeah. So we're hearing from our sources on Capitol Hill that there's three paths that the end of September could take. The first is one you just mentioned, where there is no budget, which means there's a government shutdown. No one wants a government shutdown. We all agree the government is wasteful, but it's very inefficient. And from a taxpayer's perspective, no one wins in a government shutdown, because federal workers are still going to get paid, but they won't be working. So we don't really like that. The second one is a, you know, bipartisan budget agreement. And if passed as prologue, we'll end up spending much more money, because the Democrats always have high table stakes for negotiations, meaning they want to spend more, which is not very good. The third option is a continuing resolution, which is a short-term budget measure that just puts us on autopilot. We're not spending any more, but we're not spending any less. You know, from our perspective, spending only goes up over time. If we can keep that constant, even for 2 or 3 months, that's still technically a win in our book, because we're not increasing government spending. And hopefully that'll buy us a little bit more time to potentially do a second reconciliation bill, a second Republican-only bill that'll really get at the core drivers of government spending. So we're really hopeful that one of those two options, one of those three options is going to be a good for taxpayers. But at this point, we just don't know which path we're going to go down.
Okay. And you also identified, Tommy, I'm talking to Tommy Aiello from the National Taxpayers Union, that the entitlement packages are the big problem. And I know people on Social Security get angry when I call them entitlements, but it's the general term for Medicare, Social Security, federal pensions, things like that. They say, well, why are you calling it entitlements? You're making it sound like welfare. I said, well, are you entitled to get Social Security after several decades of working and paying into it? And they said, yes, I am. I said, then calling it an entitlement is an appropriate way to do it. But how do you go about doing that? Because there are probably three solutions there. Raise taxes dramatically to make it self-sufficient for now, even though it's kind of a Ponzi scheme from 1934 on, or cut benefits, which is not politically palatable or probably even tenable or doable. What's the solution to that problem?
You know, I hate to say this because it sounds such like a DC speak, but there is no good solution here. I think we have to look at this 8 years down the road, or even less than that, actually, because Social Security is going insolvent. Yep. In about 5 to 6 years, everyone on Social Security right now is going to receive about a 25% cut automatically in their benefits if nothing happens. So there is no magic solution here. You know, hopefully, as our economy continues to strengthen and more jobs are created under President Trump, we'll be able to have more people enter the workforce, more people pay those taxes that help fund Social Security, and we can extend the longevity of the program. That's yep. One piece of the puzzle. It's not a silver bullet, but unfortunately, you know, we're in a really hairy situation. But, you know, Congress, they act by deadlines. They always wait to the last minute to solve problems. Sometimes they make problems worse at the last minute. But I do think that this is going to be one of those things where we're going to be up against a deadline in 4 years from now, and then they'll figure out a way to solve the problem or kick the can down the road. It's not a great answer, but unfortunately, that's just the way Congress
works. It's not, but Tommy, let me try. My audience would tell you I have crazy ideas all the time, but let me try a crazy one that I tried a few years ago, and that was this. If you take the people best suited, I don't want to turn Social Security into a welfare program. So if you means test it, you're going to turn it into a welfare program. And sadly, because that's what it'll be. You'll say you're only entitled if you make less than a certain amount of money. What if you did this? What if you said, if you want to, you can give up. I've already, my timeline for hitting Social Security has already shifted a couple of years back in the 80s. But if you came to me and said, hey, I'll tell you what, Lars, give up a year. You know, take it a year later and you get to put more money in your own 401k. Now, you know who's going to take advantage of that are upper income earners. So if you said that, could you shift the numbers a little bit, or is there not enough to be gained there? If you said, say, to the top 10% of people who are heading up to that, you know, take another year before you take Social Security, you can pump more money into your 401k. It ends up costing the federal budget some money, but it doesn't cost Social Security. If Social Security could get out from under writing checks to, you know, 2 million people for another year, that would take some of the pressure off. And if those people were then allowed as the quid pro quo to put more money in their own retirement account, do you think that would be attractive?
I do. And I think from what I've spoken to, from some of the people I've spoken to on Capitol Hill, is they are looking for any and all ideas to help fix the problem. And, you know, when we talk about we're running $2 trillion deficits every year, you know, a fraction of that actually is from the things that people really know. That's the military, the Department of Education, a handful of other departments. Only about 33% is money that Congress can actually cut. Yep. The other two-thirds of that is the things like Social Security, Medicaid, and Medicare. They can't really touch those. So when we say, you know, we need to return to pre-COVID spending levels, we're talking about the discretionary spending side of things. If we return to pre-COVID spending levels, we'd be able to save about $400 billion a year. That's a lot of money, but at the same time, when you're cutting $400 billion from $2 trillion, it's really, what, 20%? So you're
20%,
only cutting spending
almost
by 20%.
Exactly. Yep.
So it is a real problem. And when, you know, the core drivers are those three programs, and we really need to address it. And I think the One Big Beautiful Bill started to address the Medicaid portion of that through, you know, work requirements.
Yep.
Exactly. You know, that's why we're really hopeful that a second reconciliation bill is going to take shape, and it'll continue to, you know, reform the Medicaid program so it can continue to serve the people that, you know, genuinely need the program instead of, you know, people that are choosing not to work.
That's a very good point. Tommy Aiello is Senior Director at the National Taxpayers Union. Tommy, thank you for the time. Back in a moment. Glad to get your phone calls and emails at 866-HEY-LARS. In a moment, the Border Czar says ICE is going to ramp up its operations in Seattle and Portland this week.
Some solid advice from Senator John Kennedy.
Look, if you hate cops just because of the cops, the next time you get in trouble, call a crackhead.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you on a Tuesday, and I hope you all had a wonderful Labor Day weekend. I know I did, because, well, I went to a little barbecue, did a bunch of work as well, so I was laboring on Labor Day weekend, but went off to a barbecue at my friend James Trott's house, and it was a lot of fun. Boy, I'll tell you what, you go to a guy who has a home and has his friends flying in Piper Super Cubs, including his family member, Crazy Eddie. That was interesting. And then the jet boats got out on the river, on the Columbia, and it was very, very interesting. In any case, glad to have you with me. If you want to join the best conversation in talk journalism, it's here every day at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. Great news from the man who is the border czar for Donald Trump. and that's Tom Homan. You've heard him on this show before. He's been on, I don't know, a couple of dozen times. But here's the quote I love the best. You're going to see a ramp up of operations in New York. You're going to see a ramp up of operations continue in L.A. And, you know, Portland and Seattle. I mean, all these sanctuary cities refuse to work with ICE. We are going to address that. The comments of Tom Homan, border czar for Donald Trump. Now, why is he doing that? Because the states of Oregon and Washington are sticking to their guns when it comes to protecting the interests of the illegal aliens. That's who sanctuaries protect, is illegal aliens, over and above the objections of the citizens of Oregon and Washington, and not in the best interest of the citizens of Oregon and Washington, because too many of those illegal aliens are committing a huge number of crimes. I want to give you my favorite numbers that I use to illustrate this problem, because there were people who got very mad a decade ago when Donald Trump came down that escalator, declared that he would run for president, and he began talking about immigration, illegal immigration, as one of the biggest issues in America. And it is. It was then. It was two decades before that when I started talking about it. And what Trump said that made the liberals so mad, he said, when Mexico and other countries send people as illegal aliens into our country, they are not sending their best. They are sending murderers. They are sending rapists. They are sending thieves. And that was immediately translated by both the liberal media and liberal politicians into, he's saying that all illegal aliens commit crimes. And of course, we know that's not true, but a disproportionate number of them do. So here are the numbers I want you to remember. Our friend David Cross, who follows illegal alien activities in the Pacific Northwest states, Oregon, Washington, and Idaho, he points out that he goes to the Department of Corrections, for example, for the state of Oregon. And he says, if illegals are about 4 or maybe 5% of the population of the state of Oregon, about the same in the state of Washington, what percentage of the rapists are in prison right now, convicted and sent to prison? Not accused, but convicted and sent to prison. What percentage of them are illegal aliens? If 5% of the state's population is illegal aliens, if you're being generous, then you should expect that maybe 5% of the rapists are illegal aliens. That would be wrong. In the state of Oregon, the folks locked up for rape. So in other words, you've committed a crime that is so serious that you are sent off to prison. Only about 25% of convicted felons go to prison. In the case of illegal aliens, the number of people locked up in Oregon prisons, according to the Department of Corrections, who are illegally in America, is 18% of all the rapists locked up by the Department of Corrections. 18%. Well, what about murder? Well, that one's not quite as bad. 14% of the convicted murderers who are in Oregon prisons are illegally in the United States. So in other words, they are disproportionately involved in serious crimes against people like rape and murder. So when Donald Trump said they're not sending their best, he was not exaggerating. This segment of the show is brought to you by NickShivers.com. Go to NickShivers.com for an instant offer to sell your home immediately. No showings, no hassles, and you pick the closing date. NickShivers.com for details. Now, our X poll today. Are liberal progressives in danger of going extinct? A financial analysis by the statisticians at the Financial Times finds that self-described conservatives have birth rates in their families that are above replacement level. So that's about 2.1 kids per couple is replacement level. It's above that for conservatives. What happens when you talk to self-described progressives and say, what is their birth rate? It is way below replacement level for those who identify as progressives. So our X poll question today, are liberal progressives in danger of going extinct? And I would have to give you a yes on that one. Today's X poll is brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at ultimatetruckservice.com. Now, on First Amendment Friday, this was the question. Should drivers of battery cars have to pay a per mile tax to make up for not paying gasoline taxes? 70% of you joined me in a yes vote on that, but a full 30% of you thought the battery car drivers should not have to pay an extra fee simply because they're not paying for the roads they drive on. They do pay slightly higher registration fees, but they are not paying gasoline taxes. And gasoline taxes, at least in the state of Oregon, are dedicated to the roads. I do want to mention this too quickly. Washington State had a program to upgrade all of its information technology, its IT infrastructure. They spent 10 years and $30 million and got exactly nowhere. They have now decided to simply drop the project altogether. And I guess nothing is going to show improvement because government is full of people who can't make a decision to save their own lives. You're listening to The Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network.
The Lars Larson Show.
Escape supply.
Ladies and gentlemen,
you ready for the big soap?
In exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
Lars. This is the Lars Larson Show.
President Trump is one badass president. He secured the border at a level we've never seen before.
Honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
For our country and for our children, the best is yet to come.
Broadcasting across the Pacific Northwest and covering Oregon, Washington, and Idaho on the Radio Northwest Network.
Lars.
And now.
He is an existential threat to democracy.
Here's your host.
Quiet, please.
Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, although over the holiday weekend, Governor Tina Kotek had called a special session to pass what she wanted, which is the biggest single tax increase in Oregon history for a transportation package. It is just over $4 billion over the next 10 years. I think that is outrageous. The public has said we don't want it. Almost 4,000 people testified against it, and the legislature then promptly ignored them. Now, the Democrats are the ones that are providing most of the votes, but there was one Republican vote, and I'm glad that the Republican vote decided to come on with me, Representative Cyrus Javity, who represents my old hometown of Tillamook, where I went to high school. Representative Javity, welcome to the program.
Well, thanks, Lars. Good to be here. Good to talk to a former, well, always a Tillamook resident, honestly. And
go cheesemakers.
That's right. That's right. Hopefully we've got a good football season coming up and lots of fun home games to go watch.
Absolutely. Now tell me this, Representative Javity, why'd you vote with the Democrats for the biggest tax increase in Oregon history?
Well, that's the big question. I've been getting lots of emails and comments and people calling me at home asking me the same thing. And, you know, for me, it boiled down to if we didn't do something now as we head into the winter to make our roads safer, to make sure that they were plowed. And, you know, in Tillamook County, the Highway 101 has rock slides every winter that have to get cleared off. We've got bridges that fail, culverts that blow out. If that road gets blocked, then our emergency medical services couldn't get to people if they needed. People can't get to work. And so when I looked at the two alternatives, either moving money around if there was money to move, or increasing the gas tax along with some other changes in that same bill, I did the math. And what I kept coming back to was I hate taxes. And I don't trust, I realize why we don't trust ODOT, but I think going forward to patch this hole, to buy us some time to think about how we're going to solve this and really change some things, I decided to vote in favor of it to make sure the money was there to keep our roads safe and open this winter.
Representative Javity, I know you expected some tough questions. Here's my question. $3.5 billion a year, almost $7 billion every 2 years for ODOT, and you bought the ODOT line that if you don't give us more, that $3.5 billion, we can't possibly plow the roads or repair roads. We can't plow the snow or repair roads because out of $3.5 billion, we can't find snow plow money, even though they've got money for climate change, DEI, and a whole bunch of other nonsense. And you bought the idea that they could not possibly find that money to do those essential tasks unless they got the biggest tax increase in Oregon history. Is that credible to you?
Well, you framed the question really, really well, to be honest. And I get it, like I said earlier, and you know this, Oregon has a trust, or ODOT has a trust problem. And it's not imagined, it's earned. You know, we've given them plenty of money over the years, especially in 2017, and we're still sitting in the same traffic jams, still avoiding the same potholes, still, looking at the same a bump in the road that's sending our cars flying if you drive over Highway 26, and it feels like nothing's happening yet, and we're just burning money.
And so that's how I approached the problem when, you know, back in the long session, then again in July when I started thinking about it, and I thought, there's got to be a better way.
Okay, but Representative Javidi, tell me this. If you don't trust him, and they haven't been trustworthy, and they have lied to the legislature and said, we can do that bridge for $250 million, and now it's $800 million, why would you give a bunch you don't trust, who have been demonstrably irresponsible, why would you give them one more dime instead of telling them, figure out how to do it with the money you're already getting?
That's a good question, Lars, and I think it's important for your listeners to see how I was seeing it. We start with that trust issue, and you look at it, and you say, well, then just get by with what you've got, and that's where I went first. I looked at all the different spots where we can get money. You talked about DEI and CPP and the climate money, the money that we've spent on I-205 and I-5 Rose Quarter, and I said, what if we just swept all that money into the bucket? And when we looked at the math, we were still short. And then when I looked at, well, what else is there? And there was the public transportation money. And if we brought that over, it's true, we could have got there. But it meant two things. We got public transportation, which I realize not everyone uses.
Hold on. Where are you gutting public transportation?
Public transportation, the stiff money, would have been used to fill the maintenance hole instead of funding public transportation.
Well, for example, you mentioned the Rose Quarter. Is that project going to happen at all now that they've lost almost $500 million because it was taken away by the feds? That thing's a dead duck, isn't it?
You know, you're absolutely right. They've got some serious problems with the I-5 Rose Quarter, not only because of
the losses. No. I want to answer this. Is that project effectively dead today?
In my opinion, right now, it's effectively dead because I don't know where we're going to get the money to fund it.
How much money is committed to it now?
Oh.
A couple hundred million?
A couple hundred million in
engineering. There's half the money you got in the new tax increase right there. So why not say that one's dead? IBR also appears to be dead. Take the money committed to that. Meet current needs with it.
Well, if you know, back to the I-5, the money's spent, Lars. They spent it on engineering. We can't just reprint the money. So it's not just there to sweep. What you're really talking about sweeping are the major road repair dollars that fix the bridges, Highway 6 that's sliding off, et cetera. You sweep all of that into maintenance.
No, I'm not talking about taking money out of road maintenance. I'm saying, how much money do they have committed to IBR that has not been spent? Because they're planning to start construction next year. They're going to pay for that with something. How much money does ODOT have already set aside for IBR that has not been spent?
Well, that's a more complicated question, and not to skirt it, but what I mean is that money has already been given by the bondholders, and we can't break that contract with the bondholders. That money has to be committed and spent on the projects that it was set aside for. So the only money that's left is not road maintenance dollars, like you said. It's road construction dollars that go to fixing the small bridges, not the named projects, fixing the roads that have fallen off into the beach in PC, in Pacific City. That's the money that we're talking about moving into maintenance, which is plowing the roads, removing rock slides, repainting lines. So when we say we want to move money out of capital projects right now, that's the money that we haven't already committed that's already tied up in projects that like I-5, I-205, Dundee, et cetera.
Is there the money to build the IBR right now?
I don't believe there is.
Okay, then next year when ODOT starts construction, knowing they don't have the money, they're putting you right back in the same spot they put you in with the Abernathy Bridge. Abernathy Bridge by itself is over budget by about $500 million. That's exactly what you need in the next 12 months to meet current needs. They're going to walk you right into the same project because they lowballed it on the front end and lied. And now you're already halfway through it, so you can't quit.
Okay, absolutely right, Lars. And that it focuses back on, you know, we allocated the money. The projects have grown to a size that we don't have the funding for. And we have to change the system. And this bill also included some significant accountability measures to make sure on any new projects or existing projects that we can hold their feet to the fire.
Representative Javidi, did anybody get fired at ODOT for lying to the tune of hundreds of millions?
Well, I can't name anybody that's been fired, and that'd be a better question for the governor and for...
The governor doesn't talk to me. But Representative Javidi, I'm going to look forward to talking to you over the next few months. I don't think the answers add up. I think ODOT is now saying we overspent our budget, we lied to the legislature, and they're giving us more cash. I don't think that makes sense. Representative Cyrus Javidi, who represents the Tillamook area and voted with the Democrats on that.
and Team Kissin on Hamas.
For years now, many of us have been warning that the barbarians are at the gate. We were wrong. They're inside. There are positives as well. I mean, say what you want about Hamas supporters. At least they know what a woman is.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
Our poor president takes a three-day breather. Just three little old days. And y'all out here done acting like he done met Jesus at the pearly gates.
Yeah, that is Queen Katrina on the social media platform X talking about Donald Trump. And I guess you have truly become a major league celebrity when rumors, false rumors about your own death actually populate social media. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. This is so crazy because the way Trump views it, because based on the comments he's made in the last 24 hours or so, he says, look, I've been working so hard up to Labor Day weekend that apparently if he takes a couple of days and is not out in front of a TV camera or a microphone at all times, then people start the rumor that somehow he's passed away. And in fact, he was, well, he handled those social media rumors very, very well. He started talking to reporters today saying he was very active over the Labor Day weekend, apparently did some long, long interviews with various reporters, and he talked about the morbid speculation as fake news. One more example where the major news media and social media have played right into his hands. He's always called it fake news. The bad faith scuttlebutt, as they say in the New York Post about Trump's health, kicked off after the White House released a schedule showing no public events for the president over Labor Day weekend, prompting grim hashtags like hashtag Trump is dead or hashtag where is Trump to trend on X. He had a thin weekend schedule. It was announced 4 days after his last public appearance at a cabinet meeting last Tuesday. And there's been lots and lots of speculation that maybe Donald Trump is not healthy. Well, it turns out he's very, very healthy. But boy, did that get people going, like the young lady who you just heard a moment ago. Take a listen to what she says about Joe Biden, for example.
Lord, and soon how we forget that old Uncle Joe was missing near about four whole daggum years. Nobody knew if he was napping, sniffing, or on a beach somewhere shoving freaking ice cream down his daggum gullet.
Now, I got to tell you something. Maybe it's the contrast between Joe Biden for 4 years, where he very rarely ever spoke to reporters. He almost never held any kind of news conference. When he did, he had a news conference in which the reporters were carefully screened by his staff. In many cases, they actually had the reporters ask questions from a list of questions, and then Joe Biden had little 3x5 index cards or other preparation so that he could read the answer to questions that appear to have been formulated by the White House staff. But Joe Biden was almost invisible as president, having his wife preside over one cabinet meeting, being basically AWOL most of the time. They said he could have an active day from about 10 a.m. to about 4 p.m. But anything early in the morning, anything late at night, and you just weren't going to see Joe Biden at all. And in fact, Joe Biden was simply AWOL when they scheduled that debate. And think about this. That was only a year ago in June. And Joe Biden showed up for a 9 p.m. debate. Even the reporters, people like Tapper from CNN, were amazed. They said, you can't schedule this guy for something after 8 o'clock at night because he's going to be incompetent. And, of course, he showed up on the debate stage, and he was incompetent. And that was essentially the beginning of the end of Joe Biden's run for reelection. And only a couple of months later, less than a couple of months later, he was pushed off to the side, thrown into the ditch, and Kamala Harris took his place. And we know where that ended up. But what you did get in the last couple of days was Tim Walz on Labor Day at a Labor Day event in front of God and everybody, standing up and effectively wishing that Donald Trump was dead. Take a listen.
You get up in the morning and you doom scroll through things. And although I will say this, the last few days you woke up thinking there might be news. Just saying. There will be news sometime, just so you know. There will be news.
There will be news. In other words, you've got a guy who ran as vice presidential candidate to Kamala Harris. That has to be humiliating enough to begin with. And then he stands up in front of a Labor Day crowd, a bunch of Democrats for the most part, members of labor unions, and talks about how, well, you kind of hope, and then there may be news one of these days, and some days there will be news. Well, it turns out that, to paraphrase the famous misquote from Mark Twain, reports of my death have been greatly exaggerated. Twain actually didn't say that. But Twain was in kind of the same spot. He went off to a speaking tour in London way back in the day, And people in America started the rumor that maybe he had died. And so he had to talk to a reporter and say, no, I'm not. I haven't died. And reports of my death have been vastly exaggerated. There was a quote that was attributed to Twain that is not exactly what Twain said. But generally, you got the idea. But rumors over Labor Day weekend that Donald Trump had passed away, that is absolutely crazy. But the Internet absolutely loved talking about it. And apparently so do some of the politicians. J.D. Vance gave an interview with USA Today in which he said, if God forbid there's a terrible tragedy, I can't think of better on-the-job training than what I've had over the last 200 days. I guess the problem is that Trump has become so ubiquitous. He is in front of the public so much. I mean, there are days where I sit here and along with my producers, we're amazed. Trump is in front of cameras at 8 o'clock in the morning. Trump is in front of cameras around the lunch hour. Trump is in front of cameras in the late afternoon. And there are times where reporters catch up with President Trump, and he's walking from the helicopter, Marine One, back to the White House late, late into the evening or even the early morning hours of the next day. The guy is the Energizer Bunny. He goes and he goes and he goes. Well, the Daily Caller got a big interview with Trump. So he spent at least a big part of Friday talking to them. They also saw him golfing and playing with his grandkids, the kinds of things that somebody who's 79 years of age does on a holiday weekend. But the fact that he has become so commonly seen in public in front of cameras, then apparently when he disappears, even for a day or so, that somehow they've got to start the rumor that he has disappeared altogether. And that's crazy. One fervently anti-Trump social media account said, sure seems like someone is staying awfully close to Walter Reed, doesn't it? No, he's actually out on the golf course. Another one posted, he's not dead, but I think he had another stroke or a TIA. I think this one will affect his speech, which is why they won't let him near a microphone or a press pool in almost a week. No close-up pics either. Actually, he was out of public view for maybe a couple of days. And other than that, he was completely available. And then he went on Truth Social, and he said, never felt better in my life. Yeah, that's it. I'm sure it's a huge disappointment to America's liberals that they aren't done with Donald Trump. But that's the kind of crazy you get with Trump derangement syndrome. There are people who just, they are beside themselves with hatred for this man, and he's done all kinds of good for the country. And in fact, I continue to believe that he's making the best decisions for America. Is he picking from a list of perfect things he can do? I don't think these days America has enough problems, including a war that has to be resolved in Ukraine, so we're not shoveling American taxpayer money there, including major budget problems that the Democrats will not get on board with. They don't want to cut the budgets. But the fact is, Donald Trump is doing everything he can to actually straighten that mess out. And I think he's doing a very good job. And all the predictions of the contrary, saying, well, if he raises tariffs, inflation will go out of control. It did not. Or that unemployment will soar out of control. It has not. Or that they will spend more money. Well, actually, the one big beautiful bill spends about the same amount, just a little bit more, but a whole lot less than if Kamala Harris had somehow become, God forbid, president of the United States. Glad to be with you and always glad to take your calls at 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. And you're listening to the Radio Northwest Network.
The Lars Larson Show.
Ronald Reagan knew better. Do you?
All of it began the first time some of you who know better and are old enough to know better let young people think that they had the right to choose the laws they would obey as long as they were doing it in the name of social protest.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. I got to tell you something. The Democrats seem to choose the losing side of just about every issue. Let me give you a good example. You've got Washington, D.C., where 3 weeks ago, Muriel Bowser, the mayor of Washington, D.C., and you won't find a more hardcore left-wing Democrat than Muriel Bowser, was screaming and yelling, declaring that Donald Trump was not going to take over the police department or crime control in D.C. And then last week, she did a 180, at least by my estimation, she did a 180 and said, hey, this seems to be working. Carjackings, get this, are down 87%. Murders are down dramatically. And she said, maybe we'll continue to work with President President Trump on crime control after his 30 days of control of the Metro D.C. Police Department is ended at the end of 30 days. So you've got a president who can bring about that kind of change, not just in the city of the District of Columbia, but also in a politician like Muriel Bowser. And then he says just today he's going to send the National Guard into Baltimore and into Chicago. And Chicago, which has an insane level of violence all the time. And the mayor there, of course, since he's a liberal Democrat, says, we're going to resist Donald Trump. Really? You don't want him to do for Chicago what he did for Washington, D.C.? Why not? And then there's California. And Michael Letts joins me now, who's founder, president, and CEO of Invest USA. Michael, welcome back to the program.
It's always a privilege to be with you. It's a great opportunity. I thank you for the honor.
Well, you're welcome. But is Governor Gavin Newsom going to be able to get ahead of this train before he gets run over by it, by having his own crime prevention efforts in California before Trump has to extend out and say, I'll show you how to get it done. Hold my beer. Except Trump doesn't drink, so it wouldn't be hold my beer.
Well, to be quite frank with you, Lars, I think Gavin has had more than adequate time to demonstrate his prowess in good crime control. And I think he's been weighed and balanced and fell short. And I don't think he has any other rabbits in that hat that he can pull out other than to just throw out barbs and little innuendos. But outside of that, there's nothing else he can do. So I think you're going to see happen there what you're going to see happen in Chicago, Baltimore. Yes, it will be coming to Detroit. It'll be coming to New Orleans. It'll be coming to L.A., Portland, and others. Is until they show that they can produce the same results with their own ingenious methodology, which we have failed to see yet, the American people have a right to feel safe and secure.
Yeah, they do.
The Constitution provides for it, the preamble guarantees it, and we're going to deliver it.
Yeah, and here's the thing, though. When Newsom, I guess, last year began to have an enhanced crime suppression teams based on the California Highway Patrol, it actually showed some really encouraging results. But are the Democrats largely doing this because they realize if they don't, then Trump is simply going to say, you've let it get out of control. I'm going to come in and do something about it. And they're going to either have to agree with Trump like Bowser has, or they're going to have to disagree and say, no, we like the level of crime we have now. Which doesn't seem very politically palatable either.
No, it's not politically palatable at all. Here's what they've done, Lars. What they basically have done is, in California, yes, we're going to reduce crime for a day. We're going to go up and arrest some of these criminals, and crime will go down by 5. Of course, we'll let them out by 5 tomorrow. So on the third day, crime will go back up. But we'll quickly run in here and do our little polls in that 24-hour period and show you that we reduced crime by a percentage point or two, based on how effective our new policies are. But nobody buys it because you're not demonstrating any results. What are we doing in D.C.? We've got three prongs. We're going into illegal immigrants. We're not just standing there saying, here, there's extra personnel. You all need to be scared and run to another city or just stay in your basement for 30 days and then come back out. No, we have a list. We know who the illegal immigrants are who have committed crimes. And we're seeking them. They don't have to come find us. We're finding them. And we're deporting them immediately. So they won't be around in 30 days to bring the crime numbers back up. They'll be gone. Second thing we're doing is there's a bunch of people who have skipped bail, U.S. citizens. We've got the list. We're going to go pick them up and say, nah, you're not going to continue to do crime anymore. You're going to spend your time waiting on your jury trial in jail. And then the third thing we're doing is we're cracking down on juveniles. We are determined to change laws and to get judges who recognize that if you're old enough to do the crime, you're old enough to do the time. And that's the approach that we're taking. That leads to permanent results, Lars, not to these results that it will can change the polling numbers by 1 or 2% for 24 hours, and then it'll go back to where it used to be. People will see that difference.
Well, you know what I'm afraid of? I'm afraid that the mainstream media will provide cover for these politicians, because what they should do is say, well, if you brought crime down this year, with resources you already had, with laws you already had, with all the tools that you already had in hand, and you chose to wait until it was being done elsewhere, why didn't you do this a year ago, 2 years ago, 3 years ago? And I don't think those jokers like Gavin Newsom have an answer to that. Why didn't you do this a year ago? You could have. You didn't get more money. You didn't get new laws. You didn't get new personnel. You had all this stuff 2 years ago. And now today we have people who've been murdered or raped or assaulted over the last 2 years. But for your actions now, if you had taken those actions 2 years sooner, all those people would not have been harmed.
But that's what we've got Lars for. Because you're going to make sure the people do hear that question.
Single-handedly. Yeah, like I'm going to do that.
Well, you and I are going to join up together. Going to make sure give it an effort to make sure they do understand that. Because you are exactly right. Mainstream media will tell you how wonderful these programs, their programs, how horrible Trump's programs are working. Violation of the 10th Amendment. It's only a temporary fix for an hour, and then it'll go back to normal. All of which have been proven to be false. And the program, to be quite frank, has been more successful than even I anticipated. I anticipated a pretty successful program. So they're attempting to try to do everything, and they're the reason behind it, Lars. You and I don't know what it is. If this program continues to grow exponentially in its popularity because it shows results, 2026 will be a very bad election year for the Democrats because they will know good and well that people will support those who care about them first and their safety over politics. And that's what we're demonstrating.
You know what, Michael? In some ways, I wish they'd do it this way. I mean, Chicago is violent every single weekend. The stats on that website, heyjackass.com, I don't know if you've ever seen it, but it's dark humor, but it's a lot of great statistics. The guy, whoever does Hey Jackass, gets from the city. In some ways, I wish they'd split the city down the middle, draw a line down the middle. If Trump did this, and not north-south, because I think there's a difference there, but just say split it so that it's about the same on both sides and say, we're going to put the enhanced, all the extra National Guard, all the extra federal agents will be west of that line or east of that line. And we're going to do it for about a month. And at the end of the month, we're going to publicize what's happening on the law enforcement side versus the control side, if this was a medical experiment, and say to the people of Chicago, guess what? We did this on this side of the line, but your boss, the mayor, does not want it done on the other side of the line. What would you like? I think people would come unglued. They'd say, we're entitled to the same protection. Great. Then tell your politicians to get going.
There's no question you're right, although I could see them making the argument, the pro-law enforcement side just chased everybody over to our side since we're a sanctuary city. We couldn't refuse them, and we refused to prosecute them, so that's why our crime went up so drastically versus yours going down so much. You just moved them across the street. But that would be their problem for taking them.
Yep. And by the way, I think you're right. The one thing we can't measure is the thing that didn't happen. So when Trump has removed, say, 500,000 illegal, alien, violent criminals, and then crime goes down, you say, well, it's because he removed 500,000 illegal alien criminals. And it's tough to prove a negative. Why didn't this happen? But it'd be interesting to see long term. At the end of a year of actual enforcement of immigration laws, how much has crime gone down in America and how much has prosperity gone up? That's Michael Letts, the founder and president and CEO of Invest USA. Michael, thanks so much for the time. To your calls in a moment at 866-439-5277. Send emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. And you're listening to the Radio Northwest Network. Right now.
Truth be told, Lars has welcomed naysayers for 27 years, but occasionally...
Who is this person who speaks to me as though I needed his advice?
This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It is amazing what is happening right now. Donald Trump is talking about sending the National Guard to Chicago and Baltimore. And how does the governor of Illinois respond? You know who he is. J.B. Pritzker, fat guy, fat billionaire, by the way. He said the president's absurd characterizations do not match what is happening on the ground in Chicago. There is no crime emergency. Now, do you know what the statistics are for this last weekend? It was a long weekend, but still, 54 people shot, 9 killed this past weekend in Chicago. And by the way, if you ask, is that normal? I said, if you don't believe me, take a look at the stats that are put up by that website. It's called heyjackass.com. and the stats on how many people get shot every day in that city, how many people get shot on a typical weekend. Take a look at, if you don't believe me, 54 shot, 9 killed this past weekend. Again, allowing for the fact that it is a summertime long weekend. That's about typical for the city of Chicago. Dozens and dozens of shootings every single weekend. And yet the governor of Illinois, Pritzker, is saying there is no crime emergency that warrants doing what the president says he's going to do. It's crazy. Let's go to Jeff in Kent, Washington, listening on the Radio Northwest Network and KVI. Hey, Jeff, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Well, with the constant drumbeat that went on about Biden's health issues leading up to the speech and after that, and the constant talk about his health on the right-hand side. Now, with Trump having possible health issues himself coming up, as seen with his ankle issues and the hand issue and other things, are you going to sit there and check into it and be as proactive in his health, or are you just going to take the White House's word for it?
No, the answer is yes, Jeff. Without you answering the question, Jeff, I know you like to ask a question, then answer it yourself. If you actually want to ask me, yes, I will. Did I focus on the health of Jimmy Carter? Yes. Did I focus on the health of Ronald Reagan back in the day? Yes. Will we focus on the health of Donald Trump? Sure, absolutely. But when you see a little bit of swelling in his ankles or some issue, a bruise on his hand, he's 79 years old. Do you know any older people, Jeff? Jeff?
Yes. I'm one of them.
Do you ever see them get bruises? Do you ever see them get bruises on their arms or their hands? It's not a big deal. And I would ask you this. Give me a fair assessment. Do you think that Donald Trump sounds like one of the most vigorous and active 79-year-olds you've ever met?
Well, I don't care for the man myself, but what
I know you don't like him, but I didn't ask if you like him, Jeff. I'm asking you, does he seem like one of the most vigorous 79-year-olds you've ever met?
Not really, no. I know plenty of people his age that are more healthy and more active and take care of themselves better physically than him and have a better diet. So I know plenty of people that are better, active, and healthier than him.
I didn't ask better. I just said, does he seem like one of the most active 79-year-olds? There are an awful lot of people in their 70s who are sitting in a chair in front of Jeopardy every day. They're not hopping on and off of aircraft. They aren't going out and giving speeches. That guy is going from about 6 o'clock every morning until oftentimes midnight. And he's active all the time, and he's out golfing, he's out having meetings, he's talking to reporters anytime they want to talk to him, and it makes you mad that we focused on Joe Biden. Did you ever see Joe Biden do more than 2 or 3 questions in answer to a reporter and not stop making sense in the middle?
No, don't try and paint me as a Biden supporter.
Answer my question. When Joe Biden talked to reporters, did he oftentimes get 2 or 3 words into a sentence, and then he sounded like he had lost his mind?
Yes, he did. I am no Biden supporter. Don't paint me as one. I thought that they should have used the 25th Amendment on him, and I think they should do it on Trump if necessary.
Where are you? Okay, can you give me one piece of evidence of Trump's incapacity to do the job? Based on his statements or his physical activities, tell me something you've seen that makes him incapable of doing the job. That's what the 25th requires.
Oh, just for what I've seen of his mental capacity, yes, you disagree with me. I see it differently. I see a mentally...
When he is asked questions, he gives answers, and he seems sharp on every subject that they talk to him about.
He rambles. He goes off topic and rambles.
And isn't he allowed to do that? Jeff,
ask him a direct question and he starts rambling off on something totally separate, yeah.
I think you're watching a different movie than we've all been watching, Jeff, but you're an interesting naysayer and I appreciate the call. Let's go to Bob. Hey, Bob, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Thanks, Charles. Just interesting, the birth rate statistics. I see the problem isn't with the birth rate, and I would think conservatives are going to go extinct just because of the public education system, television, movies, books.
Well, smart conservatives are pulling their kids out of the public education system, aren't they?
What's that?
aren't smart conservatives pulling their kids out of the public education system? How does it affect you if you pull your kids out?
Those are, if they can afford to do that.
There are millions of people who are of average means who have pulled their kids out of toxic government schools, correct?
Yeah.
Oh, sounds like his Obama phone gave up. Thanks, Bob. I appreciate the call. It's Tuesday. It's the Lars Larson Show, and you're listening to the Radio Northwest Network.
The Lars Larson Show.